The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, today is Safer Internet Day, and research has revealed that a third of young people are addicted to social media. Not only that, there is all that we would already know about the nature of the algorithms and how they are designed to both create obsession and how they are designed to tap into the most base emotions that any of us, young or old, have. Joining me now is Fiona Jennings, who is Head of Policy and Public Affairs at ISPCC, and Stella O'Malley, psychotherapist and author. And Fiona, let me start with you. From a children's representative perspective, how significant a threat is unfettered internet access and social media?
Yeah, I suppose it goes without saying, Anton, that, you know, if you're going to give your child an internet enabled device, that you need to be able to show them how to use it, how to be safe on it. Particularly if they're younger, then you need to have, you know, the requisite parental controls in place. But even at that, we say that's still not a panacea for the content that, you know, your child or young person might see online. So often, I suppose, what we find is that when we're supporting parents is that it can start off, you know, very naively or very innocently, and they're looking at a particular, it might be a video on YouTube, or it could be something else that they've just done a search for online. Like often you get like, you know, short clips of favourite cartoons and things like that. But I suppose then it's, you know, as the algorithm, as we talk about, you know, as that is being fed, then it understands what you like. And then the relationship then between that and the next piece of content, and that next piece of content that your child lands on, it may not be appropriate for their age. So the parental supervision is really important.
How do you define at what age is it appropriate to give what level of access and what level of device?
So I think if you're starting out and you're a new parent and you're introducing, you know, devices or smart devices into your family, that it absolutely is, you know, very much at if it's a very young age, then they do need that, you know, parental supervision. But then as they get older, then like everything, you know, you can give them a little bit more leeway. We would never say there's a particular age to give a child a smart device, whether that be a tablet or a phone or whatever. It really is down to the parent and why they might feel that, you know, their child or young person needs a phone. You know, there is a smartphone free initiative now that, you know, is in primary schools. So they've asked a lot of parents to sign up to that, that they wouldn't buy their child a smartphone until they're finished primary school. And then they get into secondary school then. And, you know, a lot of teenagers do have, you know, smartphones, smart devices, etc. But it really is down to the family and for the family to think themselves, you know, does my child need a smart device, or can they have, you know, something that perhaps is not connected to the internet?
How do you justify a yes to that question in relation to a child? Because want or enjoy is a different thing. But to say that my child actually needs a smart device, what's the reason the child needs a smart device?
And that's a really good question. Yeah. Why do they need? And that is the question that we would kind of put back to parents as well. What is it that they need? If it's merely that they need a source of communication between them and the child when they're not in their presence, then do they need a smart device? Well, no, they don't need a smart device. And again, I suppose it might come back then to the whole like parental solidarity piece as well. And this is something that we would often talk about when we do our talks with parents, you know, for them to kind of come to get together as well, like, and, you know, agree something among themselves as well as a parent group, because often that need arises out, well, Johnny has one or Jenny has one and I need one now too.
Well, Stella O'Malley's with a psychotherapist and author. What of that, Stella? Because actually what a lot of parents are balancing is not so much the should my child have a smartphone or not, but how long can I buck the trend of the other kids in school before that becomes a damaging pressure?
Yeah, it's such a good point. I do think parental solidarity really matters. And the longer we can push it, the better. It does seem to kind of crash down in first year in secondary school. And I'm really glad that we get as far as sixth class. I do think when you do give your child a phone, giving it to them as if it's their possession is probably kind of setting a wrong tone, especially when it's a really expensive phone and it's they're getting it for the confirmation and it's this big kind of, it's become a new kind of rite of passage, which doesn't really set the tone right, because suddenly they think it's theirs. They think they have the rules over it. And it really should be that like the parent is allowing them the use of the phone, which they're paying for, so that the kind of parent remains with one hand on the phone with rules and with boundaries around it. Because we've never given such a powerful kind of tool to children before. And they can reach the world with this, and the world can reach them. And so we really should make sure that the child realizes it's not actually yours. I'm buying it for you, and you're using our Wi-Fi. Because I think children, especially teenagers, they think it's my phone. Get out. You know, you can't go near it. And that isn't actually the appropriate way to go at it.
How do you handle then the intrinsic addictiveness of the device? Because essentially, I mean, even if it is something as simple as YouTube, you're handing a child a device and you're saying, look, here is something that algorithmically is designed to addict you, and its business model is based on, once you're addicted, selling things to you. That's quite a challenge to then say to the kid, but don't use it too much.
Yeah, it's asking too much of them. You know, Jonathan Haidt wrote a great book, The Anxious Generation. And, you know, he explains how every single time we put our phone down, there's a multi-billion dollar industry, you know, consorting together to get you to pick it back up. And it's working on adults who are 50 as much as teenagers who are 15. And it's working very well. We're going to look back on this period, just like back in the day when everybody was smoking and everybody knew they shouldn't have been smoking, but everybody was smoking and kind of shaking their head as they lit up another fag. It's like that now. We kind of know it's bad for us. We know we're addicted. It's become commonplace for everybody to go to the toilet with their phone. So we've kind of lost all sense of decency around kind of like you go for a coffee with somebody and they slam the phone between you, as in there's a heavy presence, there's a third presence. So we do have to model it ourselves, and we have to explain to children that we're all fighting this multi-billion industry. And it's a fun sapper, and it not only algorithmically sells things to you, but more importantly, it's shaping your opinions. If you think your opinions aren't being shaped, you don't know what you're talking about, because actually it's shaping how you understand the news and what you actually understand is going on in the world around you. So some people are like very involved in mental health TikTok, and it's a really dark scene. And somebody else might be very involved in a kind of masculine kind of vibe and teenage kind of, you know, Andrew Tate kind of thing. There's a lot of kind of scenes going on that are really influencing teenagers, and their brains are still in formation. They're under construction as brains, and they're being shaped, and their information and their views of the world and their politics are being shaped in ways that they don't know because of the algorithms. So the more that they can watch, you know, films like, you know, The Social Dilemma, and kind of so that they're aware that they are being shaped, at least at some part, to kind of combat it. But honestly, you know, we really have to be aware that the tech companies at a flick of a button could give a hell of a lot more power and authority to parents, and they don't. And that's a real issue for parents, because it's too much to ask parents. It's very, very, very hard to get control over your child's 15, 16, 17-year-old child's you know, tech management.
Well, on that note, Fiona, when you, and I assume you do, when you talk to the tech companies on behalf of the ISPCC, what level of positive engagement do you get, particularly in the new era now, where they have discovered that cozying up to the authoritarian regime in the US is beneficial to them?
You know, we do meet the tech companies, and we do obviously raise our concerns with them. But, you know, to Sella's point, you know, they're there, you know, for one reason and one reason only, and that's their bottom line. You know, their duty, if you want, is to their shareholder. It's not necessarily to the end user. That is hugely problematic. At the same time, though, and that's, you know, part of, you know, the event that the Irish Safer Internet Centre, that we're a partner in, along with Webwise Hotline and the National Parents Council, that we had today, you know, with a lot of young people there as well, was looking at the whole role that algorithms play, the whole role that influencers play. But at the end of the day, you know,
but it's lip service, really, isn't it?
They're, I suppose, in one way, you know, and I know what you're saying about, you know, the US administration and everything that's happening over there presently at the moment. But I suppose we do live in Europe. We do have a regulatory framework in place that's underpinned by the Digital Services Act, by our own online safety framework and the online safety code that we have. You know, is it a panacea? It's not. But if you think about it, Anton, we have come so far with no regulation or, you know, self-regulation, it's been determined. So we have got a long way to go in terms of clawing a lot of that back. I suppose the question is, you know, we want to try and do it as quickly as possible, because that's going to reduce the amount of harm to children and young people. But again, you know, these products, these services are very much part of their daily lives. It's very much part of all our daily lives. So platforms absolutely do need to step up to the plate.
Well, that's reflected in a text just being said. It's not just young people, it's us adults too. Texter says, I'm 49 and I am totally addicted to my phone. Another, we need to teach children it's not just a possession, it's a tool that they can access so much with, but if misused, it's dangerous. Teach them to respect it and respect them with trust. What of, because you talked about parental solidarity in this, Fiona, what about the issue of you can set all the access rules you like for your child, but if the norm is that smart devices are available, whichever child has the least parental controls, everybody's watching their device.
They are, and that's another problem. And I suppose that, you know, we find that then, you know, there's been a lot of talk of, you know, smartphone bans, etc. as well. And, you know, I think that the research is emerging now to show that, you know, bans really aren't, you know, as effective as we think or we would like them to be. And there is that problem that, you know, you may not have your child, you may not give your child a smart device, but or a smartphone, but yet, you know, the other 10 in the class have it and they're able to access the content. And that really is where, you know, the parental solidarity piece comes in. But that's also where the parent and child relationship piece comes in as well, in that, you know, you have to be able to have conversations with your child about their online lives, about their digital lives. And it's really important in that, you know, if they do come across, and when they do come across something online that is harmful, that does concern them, you want them to be in a position that they will come to you without any fear of anything punitive happening to them. Because the last thing you want them to be doing is looking at this type of content, being really worried, being really concerned, it impacting them in different ways, and them to feel that they're on their own.
Of course, I suppose the issue in this, Stella O'Malley, is that there is, as with all things, a rich-poor divide, in that if you have disposable income and disposable time, you can give this level of attention, you can have these conversations. If you're working 10, 12 hours a day, spending a huge time in a commute just trying to make ends meet, it's very difficult to have the headspace to monitor a child to that degree.
That's such a good point. I've met a lot of children and, you know, they've grown up online and so they're technically safe because they're at home and they're in their bedroom. But actually they're kind of feral online because they're going places that they shouldn't go. And when you've kind of been exposed to sexual content before you're mature enough, it can really, really disturb you. Billie Eilish, I know, did an awful lot around that. She spoke about it. She was exposed to a lot of porn at a very young age, and it really shaped her for many years as a result. And so it's a very big issue for parents who are distracted or who are very busy. They have a false sense of safety because the child is inside, and it's not actually true, and it's not actually reality. The fact is, when your kid is playing online, they're playing next door to the red light district, and they could easily fall in. And it's kind of like roadkill. Once you see it, you're kind of compelled to kind of look at it and see what's actually happening. And their brains mightn't be up to it. They mightn't be sexually mature at all. And it can be really disturbing. And yet they can feel compelled to revisit it and revisit it. And they're way over their head. They're in way over their head. And it's so easily accessible. And so any parent who is working, I really do urge you to get in parental controls. I'm not saying they're the be all and the end all, but the more obstacles you can get in the way of the child's usage, the better.
Lastly, Fiona, in terms of the parental responsibility, is there an element as well of the example being set by the parent? Because for a lot of parents, I assume, it's do what I say, not what I do. You don't get to have a phone. I mean, excuse me, I'm going on mine.
Very much so. You know, like anything else, you know, children, you know, look up to their parents in terms of modelling behaviour. So, you know, we do say that to parents as well. You know, when we talk to them that, you know, it is very much monkey see, monkey do. So that if you want your child to have a healthy online behaviour, a healthy behaviour or a healthy engagement with technology, then, you know, you have to model that behaviour too.
Fiona Jennings, Head of Policy and Public Affairs at the ISPCC, and Stella O'Malley, psychotherapist and author. Thank you both very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.